Chapter 4. Asunder. Taking the station had been as easy as any of them could have hoped. There was pride to be taken there, albeit not much. If a warrior could find glory in capturing a backwater manufactorum installation like this, then Talos wouldn't begrudge him for it. But as victories went, it rang hollow. A raid of necessity, not of vengeance. A supply run, the words taunted him, even as they dragged a smile across his lips. Not the kind of engagement that would be adorning the Legion's banners for centuries to come. Still, he was pleased with Septimus, and glad to have him back aboard the ship. 2 months without an artificer had been an annoyance, to say the least. 3 nights ago, Talos had taken his first steps onto the station's decking. It was not a treasured memory. The boarding pod's doors flowering open, twisting the steel of the station's hull with that distinctive whine of protesting metal. Then, as always, emerging into a welcoming darkness. Visors pierced the black with programmed ease. Thermal blurs looked vaguely embryonic as they curled in upon themselves. Humans on all fours, reaching blindly, cowering and weeping. Prey crying around his ankles, resisting death by only the most pathetic and futile attempts. Humanity was at its ugliest when desperate to survive. The indignities people did to themselves, the begging, the tears, the frantic gunfire that could never pierce Ceramite. The Eighth Legion stalked through the station almost unopposed, stealing what little excitement there might have been. Talos spent several hours listening to the braying of other claws over the vox. Several had run amok, butchering and relishing in their ability to inspire fear in the trapped humans. How they'd cried their joy to one another during those long hours of maddened hunting. "Those sounds," Talos had said, "the voices of our brothers. What we are hearing is the Legion's death rattle. Curious how degeneration sounds so much like laughter." Zal had grunted in reply. It might have been a chuckle. The others forbore comment as they moved down the lightless corridors. 3 nights had passed since then. For those 3 nights, First Claw had done as the Exalted had ordered, overseeing the Covenant's resupply. Promethean fuel was taken in barrels and vats. Raw, roiling plasma was leached out of the station's generators. Ore of all kinds was taken in great loads to be turned into materiel in the Covenant's artificer workshops. Useful members of the station's crew, of the few hundred that escaped the initial massacres, were dragged aboard the ship in chains. The vessel still remained docked, even now sucking what it needed through fuel lines and cargo loaders. 6 hours ago, Talos had been one of the last to drag slaves aboard, finding them hiding in a canteen that had clearly been a site for one of the Claw's butchery. According to the Exalted, the Covenant of Blood would remain docked another 2 weeks, leeching everything of worth from the processing plants and factory foundries. All was as well as could be expected, until someone slipped the leash. The slaughter aboard Ganges was done, but some souls were never satisfied. A lone warrior stalked the Covenant's decks, blades in his hands, blood on his faceplate, and his thoughts poisoned by superstitions of a curse. It was a curse to be a god's son. Were these not the prophet's own whining words? "It was a curse to be a god's son." Well, perhaps that was so. The hunter was willing to concede the point. Maybe it was a curse, but it was also a blessing. In his quiet hours, when he was granted mercy for even a moment, the hunter believed that this was a truth the others too often forgot. Forever they looked to what they didn't have, what they no longer possessed, glories they would never achieve again. They saw only the lack, never the plenty, and stared into the future without drawing strength from the past. That was no way to live. A familiar pressure grew behind his eyes, worming its way within his skull. He had lingered too long in the stillness of reflection, and a price would be paid in pain. Hungers had to be sated, and punishments were inflicted when they weren't. The hunter moved on, his armored boots echoing along the stone floor. The enemy fled before him, hearing the ticking thrum of active battle armor and the throaty rattle of an idling chain blade. The axe in his hands was a thing of fanged and functional beauty, its tooth tracks oiled by sacred unguents as often as blood. Blood. The word was a splash of acid across his cobwebbing thoughts. The unwanted scent of it, the unwelcome taste, the flowing of stinking scarlet from ruptured flesh. The hunter shivered and looked to the gore lining his weapon's edge. Immediately he regretted it. Blood had dried in a crimson crust on the axe's chainsaw teeth. Pain flared again, as jagged as knives behind the eyes, and didn't fade this time. The blood was dry. He had waited too long between kills. Screaming released the pressure. But his hearts were pounding now. The hunter broke into a run. The next death belonged to a soldier. He died with his hands smearing sweat streaks over the hunter's eyes, while the ropey contents of his stomach spilled out in a wet mess down his legs. The hunter cast the disemboweled human against the wall, breaking bones with barely a shove. With his gladius, a noble blade that had suffered a century's use as little more than a skinning knife, he severed the dying man's head. Blood painted his gauntlets as he held the harvest, turning it over in his hands, seeing the shape of the skull through the pale skin. He imagined flaying it, first slicing pale peels of skin free, then carving ragged strips of veined meat from the bone itself. The eyes would be pulled from the sockets, and the innards flushed by acidic cleansing oils. He could picture it so clearly, for it was a ritual he'd performed many times before. The pain started to recede. In the returning calm, the hunter heard his brothers. There, the prophet's voice, enraged as always. There, the wretched one's laughter, grinding against the prophet's orders. The quiet one's questions were a muted percussion beneath all of this. And there, the dangerous one's snarls punctuated everything. The hunter slowed as he tried to make out their words. They hunted as he hunted. That much he could make out from their distant buzzing. His name, they spoke it again and again. Confusion, anger. And yet they spoke of savage prey. Here, in the derelict hallways of this habitation tower, the only savagery was that which they brought themselves.
Brothers, he spoke into the vox. Where are you? The prophet demanded. Who's us? Where are you? Aye.
He stopped. The skull lowered in a loosening hand, and the axe lowered alongside it. The walls leered with threatening duality, both stone and steel, both carved and forged. Impossible, maddeningly impossible.
Who's this?
That voice belonged to the snarling one, Zal.
I swear by my very soul, I will kill you for this.
Threats, always the threats. The hunter's lips peeled back from his teeth in a wet grin. The walls became stone once more, and the threatening voice of his brothers melted back into an ignorable buzz. Let them hunt as they wished, and catch up when they could. Uzas broke into another run, mumbling demands to the god with a thousand names. No prayers left his lips, for no son of Kurz would ever speak a word of worship. He commanded the divinities to bless his bloodshed, sparing no thought for whether they might refuse. They had never done so before, and they would not do so now. Mechanical teeth bit into armor and flesh. Last cries left screaming mouths. Tears left silver trails down pale cheeks. To the hunter, these things signified nothing more than the passing of time. Soon enough, the hunter stood within a chapel, licking his teeth, listening to the growl of his axe's engine echoing back off the stone. Broken bodies lay to his left and right, thickening the cool air with blood stink. The surviving vermin were backed into a corner, raising weapons that couldn't harm him, pleading with words he would only ignore. His thermal hunting vision cancelled, leaving him watching the prey through targeting locks and red eye lenses. The humans cringed back from him. None of them had even fired a shot.
"Lord,"
one of them stammered. The hunter hesitated. "Lord." Begging he was used to. The honorific he was not. This time the pain started at his temples, a pressing, knifing plunge to the center of his skull. The hunter roared and raised his axe. As he moved closer, the humans cowered, embracing one another and weeping.
"A fine display," the hunter drawled, "of imperial soldiering."
He swung at them, and the axe blade's grinding teeth met shining metal with a ringing crash. Another figure stood before him, the whining prophet himself. Their weapons were locked, the blade of gold risen in defense of the cowering Imperials. His own brother was barring his bloodshed.
"Talos," the hunter spoke the name through blood-wet lips. "Blood, blood for the blood god, do you see? I am done with this."
Each crash against his faceplate jerked his head and jarred his senses. His vision blurred over and over in quick succession, his neck snapping back hard enough to send him staggering. The corridor rang with the echo of metal on armor. Disoriented, the hunter snarled as he realized his brother had struck him in the face three times with the butt of his bolter. His mind was so slow, it was difficult to think through the pain. He sensed, rather than felt, his hands losing their grip on his weapons. The axe and the gladius fell to the ground. As he regained his balance, he beheld the chapel and... No, wait, this was no chapel. It was a corridor. A corridor aboard the...
"Talos, I..."
The dull clang of steel on ceramite echoed again, and the hunter's head was wrenched to the side, the force pulling at his creaking backbone. Talos spun the blade of gold, while the hunter crashed down to the grilled decking onto his hands and knees.
"Brother!"
Uzas managed the word through bleeding lips. It was spinal torment to raise his head, but there... Behind an overturned table, the floor strewn with homemade trinkets and curios of scavenged metal, two ragged, filthy humans were recoiling from him, an aging male and female, their faces streaked with grime. One wore a blindfold in the ever-present darkness, a covenant tradition. The hunter turned his head as his brother's footfalls drew closer.
"Talos, I didn't know I was on the ship. I needed..."
He swallowed at the cold threat of judgment in his brother's emotionless eye lenses.
"I thought..."
The prophet aimed the point of his golden blade at the hunter's throat.
"Uzas, hear me well. Even if only once in your wretched life, I will kill you the moment another word leaves your viperous lips."
The smell of old blood and unwashed metal stained the air around them. Servitors hadn't been directed to clean this chamber in many months.
"He has gone too far."
Mercutian made no effort to hide the reprimand in his voice.
"When I stood with Seventh Claw, we didn't avoid gathering for fear of tearing out each other's throats."
"Seventh Claw is dead," Zal grinned. "So, however they governed themselves, it didn't pay off in the end, did it?"
With respect, brother, watch your mouth.
Mercutian's Uphiver accent was clipped and regal, while Zal swam in the gutter. Zal bared his teeth in what would, in a human, have been a smile. In his scarred legionary's features, it was a predator's challenge.
Children, children,
Sirion chuckled.
Isn't it lovely when we gather like this?
Talos let them argue. He watched from the side of the chamber, his eye lenses tracking every movement, his thoughts remaining his own. His brothers clashed with the banter and baiting so typical of warriors, who struggled to keep each other's company away from the battlefield. Each of them wore their hybrid armor, repaired, repainted, re-engineered and resealed 1,000 times since they were granted ownership of it, so many years before. His own armor was an efficient mess of conflicting marks, formed of trophies taken from a century's worth of slain enemies. Chained to the interrogation slab in the center of the room, Uzas twitched again, a reflexive muscle spasm. The joints of his armor whirred with each tremor. Sometimes, in rare moments of silence and introspection, the prophet wondered what their gene sire would think of them now. Broken, corrupted, wearing stolen armor and bleeding through every battle they couldn't flee from. He looked at each of his brothers in turn, a targeting crosshair caressing their images in silent threat. The bleached skulls and cracked helms of blood angels hung from their armor. Each wore expressions that melded bitterness, dissatisfaction, and directionless anger. Like warhounds close to slipping the leash, they barked at one another, and their fists forever strayed near holstered weapons. His single footstep thudded an echo around the confines of the torture chamber.
Enough!
They fell silent at last. But for Uzas, who was mumbling and drooling again.
Enough, Talos repeated, gentler now. What do we do with him? We kill him,
Zal stroked a fingertip along his own jawline, where the jagged scar from a blood angel gladius had refused to heal cleanly.
We break his back, slit his throat, and kick him out of the closest airlock.
He pantomimed a slow, sad wave.
Farewell, Uzas.
Sirion took a breath, but said nothing. Mercutian shook his head, the gesture one of lamentation, not disagreement.
Zal is right.
Mercutian gestured to the prone form of their brother, bound to the table.
Uzas has fallen too far. With 3 nights to indulge his bloodlust on the station, he had no excuse for losing control on board the Covenant. Do we even know how many he killed? 14 human crew, 3 servitors, and tore Zal from Third Claw.
As he spoke, Sirion watched the prone form chained to the table.
He took 5 of their heads.
Tore Zal, Zal grunted. He was almost as bad as Uzas. His death is no loss. Third Claw is little better. They're weak. We've all seen them in the sparring circles. I could kill 1/2 of them alone.
Every death is a loss, said Talos. Every death diminishes us, and the branded will want retribution.
Don't start that.
Zal leaned back against the wall, rattling the meat hooks that hung there on corroded chains.
No more lectures, thank you. Look at the fool. He drools and twitches after slaughtering 20 of the crew on a deluded whim. Already the serfs are whispering of rebellion. Why is his life worth sparing?
Mercutian turned black eyes to Talos.
The Blood Angels cost us a lot of crew. Even with the menials from Ganges, we must be careful in rationing human life to a madman's chain blade. Zarl is right, brother. We should cast the serpent aside.
Talos said nothing, listening to each of them in turn. Sirion didn't meet any of their gazes.
The Exalted has ordered him destroyed no matter what we decide here. If we're going against that order, we need to have a damn fine reason.
For a while, the brothers stood in silence, watching Uzas thrash against the chains that held him down. It was Sirion who turned first, the servos in his neck purring smoothly as he regarded the door behind them.
I hear something, he said, reaching for his bolter.
Talos was already sealing the collar locks on his helm. And then, from the corridor beyond, came a vox-altered voice.
First Claw, we have come for you.
With Tor-Zal dead, Dalcarus found himself shouldering an unexpected burden. In better days, such potential promotion would have come with a ceremony and honor markings added to his armor. And in better days, it would have also been a promotion he actually desired, rather than one he fought for out of desperation. If he did not lead, then one of the others would. Such a catastrophe was to be avoided at all costs.
I lead us now,
Garrisath had said. He gestured with his chainsword, aiming the deactivated blade at Dalcarus's throat.
I lead us. No, you are unworthy.
The words were not Dalcarus's, despite how they echoed his thoughts. Vijayne had stepped forwards, his own weapons drawn, and started circling around Garrisath. Before he realized what he was doing, Dalcarus found himself doing the same. The rest of the branded retreated to the edges of the chamber, abstaining from the leadership challenge either from caution, prudence, or the simple knowledge that they could not best the three warriors that now advanced upon one another.
Dalcarus?
Garrisath's laughter crackled over the vox. Each of them had donned their helmets as soon as they'd learned of Tor-Zal's demise. The action demanded retribution, and they would deal with it as soon as their new leader was affirmed.
You cannot be serious!
Dalcarus didn't answer. He drew his chainsword with one hand, leaving his pistol holstered, for these ritual challenges were made only with blades. Garrisath hunched low, ready for either of the others to attack. Vijayne, however, was edging aside, suddenly hesitant. As with Garrisath, Vijayne hadn't expected Dalcarus to move into the heart of the chamber. He was more cautious, stepping away and casting red-lensed glances between his two opponents.
Dalcarus?
Vijayne turned the name into a bark of vox.
Why do you step forward?
In answer, Dalcarus inclined his head towards Garrisath.
You'd let him lead us. He must be challenged.
Garrisath's mouth grill emitted another grainy chuckle, the burn markings blackening his armor. Those curving Nostraman runes branded deep into the ceramite seemed to writhe in the gloom.
I will take him,
Vijayne grunted. His armor bore similar burns, depicting his own deeds in Nostraman glyphs.
Will you then challenge me?
Dalcarus exhaled slowly, letting the sound rasp from his helm speaker grill.
You won't win. He will kill you, Vijayne. But I'll avenge you. I will cut him down when he's weakened.
Garrisath listened to this exchange with a smile behind his skullish faceplate. He couldn't resist gunning the trigger of his chainsword. It was all the bait Vijayne needed.
I will take him,
the warrior insisted, and charged forwards. The two night lords met in a circle of their brothers, chainswords snarling and revving as the blades scraped across layered armor the color of Terran midnight. Dalcarus looked away at the end, which came with both inevitability and infuriating speed. The blades were almost worthless against Legion warplate, and both warriors fell into the practiced, traitorous brutality of chopping at each other's armor joints. Vijayne grunted as a fist cracked his head back, and the single second he bared his articulated throat armor was more than enough for Garrisath to finish him. The chain blade crashed against the softer fiber bundles encasing Vijayne's neck and bit deep, deep enough to grind against bone. Shredded armor rained away. Blood slicked the machine nerves that scattered across the chamber floor. Vijayne fell to his hands and knees with a clang of ceramite on steel, his life gushing away through a savaged throat. Garrisath finished the decapitation with a second swing of his sword. The helm clattered to the decking. The head rolled free. Garrisath stopped it with his boot and crunched it underfoot. He beckoned with his blooded blade.
Next!
Dalcarys stepped forwards, feeling his blood sing with chemical stimulants, an aching song that spread from the pulse point injection ports in his ancient armor. He had not raised his blade. Instead, he'd drawn his plasma pistol, which was met with disquieted mutterings. The magnetic coils ribbing the back of the weapon glowed with angry blue phosphorescence, painting a ghostly light over every Night Lord watching. The indrawn hiss of air through the muzzle's intake valves was a rattlesnake's blatant warning.
"Do you all see this?"
Garrisath put a sneer into his voice.
"Bear witness, all of you. Our brother defiles our laws."
The pistol juddered in Dalcarys's grip now, the fusion weapon thrumming with the need to discharge its accrued power.
"I will serve no law that does not serve us in kind."
Dalcarys risked a glance to the others. Several of them nodded. Due to his lethality with a blade, Garrisath was the leader Third Claw expected, not the one they unanimously desired. Dalcarys's gambit was founded upon it.
"You break tradition,"
one of the others, Harrogan, spoke into the silence.
"Lower the weapon, Dalcarys. He breaks tradition only because he has the courage enough to do so,"
Yan Sar replied, earning several vox-crackling murmurs.
"Garrisath must not lead," said another,
and this too earned grunts of assent.
"I will lead," Garrisath snarled. "It is my right."
Dalcarys kept the weapon as steady as its shaking power cells would allow. The timing had to be perfect. The weapon needed to be at full charge, and he could not fire unprovoked. This must bear at least some pretense of a righteous execution, not a murder. Acknowledgement runes chimed on his retinal display as the members of Third Claw signaled their decision. Garrisath must have seen the same, or else surrendered to his frustrations, for he gave a blurt of shrieking vox from his mouth grill and leapt forward. Dalcarys squeezed the trigger and released the contained force of a newborn son from the mouth of his pistol. Afterwards, when sight had returned to each of them, they stood motionless in their communal chamber. Each warrior's armor was dusted with a fine layer of ash. All that remained of Garrisath after the blinding flash of plasma release.
"You made your point,"
Harrogan growled his disapproval. And even the smallest movement, a gesture towards Dalcarys's weapon, sent dust powdering off his armor plating.
"Nothing left to salvage now."
Dalcarys answered by nodding down at Vijayne.
"Some salvage exists, and we are not led by a madman. Take heart in that."
The others came forwards now, treating Vijayne's body with little more respect than they'd show to an enemy's corpse. The body would be dragged to the apothecarium, where its gene seed organs would be extracted. The armor would be machined off into its component pieces and divided among Vijayne's brothers.
"No, you lead," said Yan Sar.
Dalcarys nodded, little pleased by the fact.
"I do. Will you challenge me? Will any of you challenge me?"
He turned to his brothers. None answered immediately, and it was Yan Sar that replied again.
"We will not challenge you, but retribution beckons, and you must lead us to it. First Claw killed Tor-Zal."
"We have lost 3 souls this day, 1 to treachery, 1 to misfortune, 1 to necessity."
Dalcarys' own beaked faceplate was a Mark VI helm of avian design. painted a dull red to match the others of Third Claw. Snaking burn scars were branded deep into the composite metal.
If we go against First Claw, we will lose more. And I have no wish to fight the Prophet.
He didn't add that one of the reasons he'd killed Garrisath had been in the hope of avoiding the fight now threatening them.
We are no longer of Halisker's companies. We are the branded Third Claw of the Exalted's Warband. We are Night Lords, born anew. A new beginning. Let us not baptize our genesis in the blood of our brothers.
For a moment, he believed he'd swayed them. They shared glances and muttered words, but reality reasserted itself with crushing finality mere seconds later.
Vengeance!
Promised Yan Sar.
Vengeance!
The others echoed.
Then vengeance it is,
Dalcarus nodded, and led his brothers into the very battle he'd murdered Garrisath to prevent. Soon after the accord was reached, the remaining members of Third Claw stalked down the central spinal corridor of the prison deck, blades and bolters in gauntleted hands. What little light existed on the Covenant of Blood played across their armor, and shadows pooled in the black rune brands burned into the warplate. Voices ahead, from behind the closed bulkhead leading into a side chamber.
Do we ambush them?
Yan Sar asked.
No,
Harugan chuckled.
They know we will not let Torzal go unavenged. They are already expecting us, I am sure of it.
The branded moved closer to the sealed door.
First Claw,
Dalcarus called, taking pains to keep any reluctance from bleeding into his voice.
We have come for you.
Sirion watched his Auspex's monochrome display screen. The handheld scanner clicked every few seconds, giving a wash of audible static.
I count 7 out there, he said. 8 or 9, if they're bunched up.
Talos moved to the doorway, uncoupling his bolter from the maglock plating on his thigh armor. The weapon was bulky, rendered ornate by bronzing, bearing 2 wide-mouthed barrels. He still felt a stab of reluctance to carry it so openly. Its bulk didn't discomfort him, but its legacy did. He called through the sealed door.
We'll settle the blood debt with a duel. Zarl will fight for First Claw.
In the chamber, Zarl gave a dirty laugh behind his faceplate. No answer came.
I'll deal with this,
Talos said to First Claw. He blink-clicked icons on his retinal display, summoning up the runes for other squads in the Vox array. The branded Third Claw flashed active.
Dalcarus?
He asked.
Talos.
Dalcarus's voice was low over the occluded Vox channel.
I am sorry for this. How many of you are out there? An interesting question, brother. Does it matter?
Worth a try. Talos took a breath.
We count 7 of you. Then let us settle on that. 7 still outnumbers 4. Prophet. 5 if I free you, Zess. 7 still outnumbers 5. But 1 of my 5 is Zarl.
Dalcarus grunted reluctant acknowledgement.
That is indeed so. How did you come to lead Third Claw? I cheated,
said Dalcarus. With the words spoken as simple confession, he offered no justification, nor any excuse. Irritatingly, Talos found himself warming to the other warrior.
This will bleed us both,
Talos said.
I am not blind to that, Prophet. And I did not spit on my allegiance to Halisker just to die on this crippled ship mere months later.
There was nothing of anger in Dalcarus's voice.
I do not blame you for Uzess's instability. I dealt with Torzal for long enough myself that I am all too familiar with the affliction of Taint. But the blood debt must be paid, and the Branded will not settle for a duel of champions. My own actions may have annihilated any lingering worth in that tradition among us, but even before I acted, they were howling for revenge.
Then you shall have your blood price, the prophet said with a rueful smile, and severed the link. Talos turned back to his brothers. Sirion stood at ease, his weapon in his hands, only his slouched shoulder guards giving any indication of his reluctance to leave the chamber. Mercutian could have been carved from granite, so dark and motionless as he stood unbowed by the massive cannon in his fists. The heavy bolter's cavernous barrel thrust from a skull's open maw. Zal clutched a two-handed chain blade in an easy grip, leaving his bolt weapons locked to his armor within quick reach.
Let's get on with it,
he said, and even Vox corruption couldn't hide the smile in his voice. Mercutian crouched, tending to his heavy bolter. The cannon was as unsubtle as Legion weaponry could be, wrapped in industrial chains and capable of vomiting a brutal rain of fire from its fat throat.
Third Claw will use bolters over blades. If Torzal is dead, we won't have much to contend with once we stand within sword's reach. Getting into sword's reach will see us dead, though. They'll cut us to pieces with bolter fire.
He sounded as maudlin as ever. Zal barked a laugh and spoke in his gutter Nostraman.
Smoke grenades as soon as the door opens. That buys us a couple of seconds before their prey sight retunes. Then we'll bring blades to a gunfight.
Silence reigned for a moment.
Free me,
the last member of First Claw snarled. Four helms turned to their brother, slanted red eyes judging without a trace of human emotion.
Talos!
Uza spat the name as he trembled, forcing his speech through clenched teeth.
Talos, brother, free me! Let me stand in midnight clad.
Something black trickled in a wet leak from his ear. The stink of Uzas's skin was cringingly ripe. Talos spoke the words as he drew the relic sword from its sheath on his back.
Release him.